They felt that she had one weapon and that she sold it. She was under care, doctor's care, for an emotional disorder. Law enforcement knew nothing about the treatment she was receiving, but her parents felt that she should not own weapons. They were under the impression that when she sold the one weapon that she did not own anymore. As it turned out, she had been hiding several weapons within the house.
That is Police Chief John Drake in Nashville revealing that the gunman in this case, in the Nashville school shooting, was under a doctor's care for emotional distress. Her parents apparently thought it was severe enough. She was living at home with him at the age of 28. They felt that it was severe enough that they asked her to give up her gun. She claimed she got rid of it. In the meantime, she was buying an arsenal of sorts at five different gun dealers, seven different weapons, but she had not been adjudicated to be incompetent, so that nothing was short-circuited there. All those purchases were legal. What do we know about these killers? At what point does their suicidal ideation become homicidal? And how do we manage this very delicate situation better? Scott Poland, Dr. Scott Poland, is professor at the College of Psychology, and director of the Suicide and Violence Prevention Office at Nova Southeastern. Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you. Happy to be on.
So help me understand, we know something about these killers. The Violence Project and others have kind of put together a profile looking back at more than 170 of these events. We know that fame-seeking can be a motivator, but to attack innocent elementary school children, do we know where that kind of poison comes from?
Well, the primary motivation is glory, as you mentioned, and unfortunately our media does glorify them, or getting even for a perceived wrong. They've even been referred to as grievance collectors, where they've just kept track of everything and everyone, and they're angry. You know, we don't know everything. You know, what is unusual about this case is primarily our school shooters have been male. They've primarily been male Caucasian. And I don't know everything about this perpetrator, but I know apparently was a transsexual individual.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that they had access to guns, and overwhelmingly our mass shooters are suicidal. Unfortunately, they've decided to kill other people first. And
help me with that. I think of with someone that's suicidal, they're turning anger inward to themselves. At what point does that flip and become homicidal ideation as well? Do we know?
Well, we know that our mass shooters and suicide is actually primary, which means most school shooters did not expect to survive. They were either going to die at their own hand,
mm-hmm.
or they were going to be killed by police. And the motivation, again, was largely either glory or getting even. And a suicidal individual is really wanting to end what they perceive as unendurable pain. They have tunnel vision or constriction. And the good news here is the vast majority of suicidal individuals have no thoughts of harming anyone but themselves,
right.
But unfortunately, some do have thoughts of harming others.
This woman was being treated. She was under, in terms of, according to the Nashville police chief, under a doctor's care for some kind of mental disorder. At what point, if any, would that therapist have a duty to report if they believe she was homicidal or suicidal?
Well, yes, now we're talking about Tarasoff from California, and it really would depend on what the therapist actually knew and whether she had threatened to harm other people, whether the therapist was aware of weapons, having a plan. And when we look back on all these incidents, it's like, yes, they were on a pathway to violence.
Mm-hmm.
They exhibited very concerning behaviors, yet we didn't put it together. And a recent trend is they post online their plans. But unfortunately, many times they've only posted it sort of at the last minute,
right.
And people didn't recognize it in time. But You know, all of these incidents really should have us keep discussing more mental health services, more available, more affordable in our country, and the question of assault weapons. And what do we need to do in our country so that we don't lead the world in mass shootings?
Yeah, and those are, I mean, there's so many different avenues that need to be explored here. But in terms of making sure that these people, if they are a danger, are adjudicated, tell me about the conversation that needs to happen within families about taking that next step, the step that would prevent them from being able to buy a weapon. I know that there's doctor-patient confidentiality, but at what point can you reach out to the family or to law enforcement and say, especially if the family already has concerns, is it the therapist in a good place to say, hey, maybe you should take those to police, or would that be a violation of some kind?
I don't believe it's a violation, and we've had a common pattern here where people have been slow to notify authorities, in denial, wanting to believe that it couldn't really happen, or
Right. In
some cases, maybe they've taken away one or two weapons, having no idea the person has, you know, a lot of other weapons. So in our families, we should not hesitate to contact police and get intervention. And we really do need to enforce red flag laws. There are parts of the country where sheriffs have said, we're never going to take someone's gun away from them.
Mm-hmm.
But if they've threatened to kill people, if they're, you know, committing domestic violence and threatening to kill their partner, well, I do believe the weapons do need to be removed, and there needs to be treatment and safeguards before they're ever returned. But we've been slow to do that everywhere. There is progress, and there's more incentives to get counties and states and local police and judges to enforce red flag laws, but we have a long way to go. And then,
yeah,
I think it
is it a matter of trust, Dr. Polin? I mean, as a family member, you know, if I had a father who was disturbed, he had weapons, I would think twice about maybe going to law enforcement officials, because I don't want him imprisoned, I don't want him arrested, I don't want necessarily to have him committed. How do we get over as a society that reluctance to take it to the next step to protect others in the community as well as our loved ones?
That's extremely challenging. You outlined the dilemma there very well, but at some level, maybe family members need to do whatever is necessary to remove the weapons from the home. And they could do that without involving law enforcement, or they could take it to law enforcement and say, lock these up for the time being. And maybe they would feel like they're protecting their loved one from, you know, being questioned or being jailed or being subjected to treatment they don't want. But at least the weapons would be removed. And of course, closing some of the loopholes about buying weapons at gun shows and waiting periods and, you know, I just don't understand why anyone believes we need assault weapons.
You know, and that's something, well, I've heard the same thing from loved ones in my family. And I know that that is certainly a topic of discussion that the president is forcing right now. Let me ask you very quickly before I lose you. Trey Gowdy is a former congressman. He's now a commentator on Fox. He's also a former federal prosecutor. He called for red flag laws just a few minutes ago on Fox. But he's called for something else. He says there should be not just a moral obligation for parents to report someone they believe is a danger to themselves or others, parents or loved ones, but a legal obligation that you could face a penalty by not reporting, that you have they would establish a legal duty to report. Is that a good idea?
I generally agree with that line of thinking, but you know, most of our school shooters in recent years have been students who attacked their own schools. And I do believe we need to completely redo the Secret Service study of 20 years ago about, you know, targeted attacks on schools. But we all need to be following the case from Oxford, Michigan. It's a rarity, but those parents have been in jail this entire time.
Right.
And we'll see what actually happens to them. But it's really going to come down to how much did they know, and reasonably should they have known that their son was a danger when they essentially bought him a gun and ignored all his signs of mental illness. So we'll have to follow that test case, and then we'll see, could we move to the next step of trying to create a moral obligation for everybody to come forward and make sure there's a careful threat assessment and weapons are removed and mental health services that are needed are received.
Dr. Scott Poland, professor of psychology at Nova Southeastern. We thank you for your time, sir.
Anytime.
You're on the Guy Gordon Show. I think we're going to have some time for calls, hopefully. Much more to come.